Hello.
I'm Kendra.
And I'm August.
And you're listening to Book Dumb, the bookcast brought to you by a couple of dummies.
This week, we have a little bit of a different episode for y'all. We're going to open this episode with a spoiler-free discussion of Amy Engel's The Roanoke Girls. And then we're going to have some reading recommendations for books that have maybe a similar vibe, similar genre, but not super strict with that. And then books that we would like to read that we think might have a similar vibe, but we're not sure because we haven't read them yet.
Yeah.
And from there, we're just going to scream about Roanoke Girls and it's going to be filled with spoilers.
Yeah, because I think we both need to process that book.
There's a lot happening here and it's not pretty.
In fact, it's quite ugly and my stomach still hurts thinking about it.
Yeah. Are you mad at me for recommending this book to you?
No, it's a book I wanted to read anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Mad about it.
We'll get into it.
Definitely not at you. If I'm mad at anything, there are certain choices I'm mad about.
I think that's totally understandable. But before we get into it, what are you reading right now?
I am reading Rule of Wolves by Leigh Bardugo. It's the most recent in the Grishaverse series, almost a trilogy. I have no idea. There's so many books out by now. And I love it. I know it's not everyone's favorite fantasy. There are some very valid critiques happening of it. But it's such a comfort read for me. Yeah. I found the original trilogy when I was just out of high school. Mm-hmm. And I loved it so much. And so it's funny because I'm supposed to be reading another book for an episode we're supposed to record. And I was going to flip through the pages of Rule of Wolves. I'm like, oh, it's such a pretty book. And I read 300 pages of it this morning, so I couldn't help myself.
Yeah. And who are you to resist yourself?
I'm literally no one to resist myself. I could not. And what about you? Beautiful. What are you reading right now?
I just started listening to the audiobook for Perfume, The Story of a Murderer by Patrick Süskind, I believe is the pronunciation of his last name. I don't know. He's German. I'm not. But I'm really liking this so far. I listened to 3 hours of the audiobook today.
Oh my gosh.
Because I feel like I'm loving this book a lot. So just quick background. Perfume is the story of a murderer, as it says in the title, who lives in 18th century France and is obsessed with smell and has a superhuman ability to smell and distinguish different scents. And so it plays into his murder. Surprise. But right now I am watching the TV show Hannibal. Let me tell you, I was on the fence to watch this. You know how big of a Silence of the Lambs stan I am. No one can ever replace Anthony Hopkins. He is my king. But Mads Mikkelsen as Hannibal Lecter in Hannibal the TV show is giving me major Perfume energy. Mm. And I love it a lot.
Okay, so you think maybe Hannibal fans should read Perfume?
I would say so. If you like people who have niche professions that incorporate them into their horrible murders, this book is for you. But yeah, I really like it so far. So far, there's only been one murder, but I'm guessing there'll be many more.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Waiting for you to incorporate podcasting into your crimes.
Who knows? Maybe I already have.
Oh.
Boom, boom. Ears just start bleeding.
Was that the SVU? Boom, boom.
Always. This is not for the podcast, but my laundromat always plays Law and Order, and there's something so homey about it.
I love Law and Order.
It's just really, really nice to be there at 8 a.m. and you just hear boom, boom, and then you see Munch and you're like, my guy.
When I was sick after the vaccine, I cuddled up and watched SVU for 4 hours, and I was like, this is comforting.
It's beautiful. Okay, so away from that, how can we talk about this book without any spoilers? What is The Roanoke Girls about, Kendra?
So, gives it away in the title. It is about a couple of Roanoke girls. So our main character, Lane, in the first chapter, her mother has died by suicide. And so she is sent to live with her only remaining relatives that she actually knew nothing about beforehand. She didn't realize, her mother never talked about her relatives. And so she ends up going to her grandparents' house, who live in this grand manor called Roanoke. You know, when you have an estate and it has a name. So.
Isn't the town they live in also called Roanoke?
Oh, I think you're right. Yeah.
It's just a Roanoke-centered town.
Yeah, extremely wealthy family. Mm-hmm. Very mysterious. she shows up and she has this cousin Allegra.
Apparently Lord Byron had an Allegra in his life.
Mm-hmm.
Do I know about it? No. Will I do research on it? Later.
That's past midnight research.
Okay, yeah, so she and Allegra meet. They're both teens with not a lot to do. It's summertime, and they live with their grandparents and a guy named Charlie.
Is that the cop?
No, that's Cooper.
Cooper. Why would you give two of the only male characters a scene?
I don't know. All I know is Cooper is our friend Paige's dog's name, and Charlie is my childhood dog's name. So I'm just thinking of puppies.
And there are a couple of puppies in this book, so... Yikes. Yeah, so creepiness ensues. I think you can imagine, like, you know, this is a thriller.
Yeah.
There are two young, very pretty, well-endowed that they talk about all the time. In this book, I've never... my first gripe of the book. I have never read a thriller that talked about teenage breasts so much.
Well, they play a part. Sexualization of young people plays a part in this novel.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But the author, like, contributes to that. And I remember being like, this is weird. But yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of hypersexualization of young bodies, which is interesting.
Yeah, and it's clear from the moment that these two girls meet, they're going to have a dysfunctional relationship. Mostly Allegra, you can tell something's going on with her, and that's one of the big mysteries.
Yeah, important to note, Allegra is also an orphan, just like Lane, and Allegra has lived at Roanoke her entire life. So she has never left there. She grew up with her grandparents in this environment. So a lot of things that seem strange to Lane are perfectly normal to Allegra.
Good point, yeah.
And that's something that is shocking throughout the entirety of the book.
Yeah. And what do we know upon first visiting Roanoke? What happened to every other Roanoke girl?
They're dead.
Or missing. Yeah.
Yeah, so it doesn't seem like Roanoke girls have the best luck. Mm-hmm. And we'll get into why in the spoiler portion of this episode.
Yeah, so before we get there, do you have some books in mind that give you similar vibes?
Okay, immediately upon finishing it, and I told you this already, Major Sharp Objects by Gillian Flynn meets The Girls by Emma Klein Energy. Mm-hmm. Like, if those two books came together and had a baby, it'd probably be this.
Okay.
Yeah. How about you?
I thought of Dare Me by Megan Abbott. I think definitely it's not as well done as Dare Me, or I didn't like it as much as Dare Me, but as far as the over-sexualization of very young girls, of the examination of, like, dysfunctional female friendships, especially with a lot of codependence in them, that's a big thing in Dare Me. And I also thought of Into the Water by Paula Hawkins. She wrote Girl on the Train. I actually liked Into the Water a lot better.
Okay.
And I would recommend that over Girl on the Train. But the reason I thought of that is because Into the Water is about a woman, a full-grown woman, whose sister dies by suicide, and she has to return to her childhood home to raise her niece. And stuff resurfaces. Again, I think Into the Water is a lot better than Roanoke Girls, so if you loved Roanoke Girls, I think you're really going to like Into the Water.
Yeah. Okay. Adding to the TBR.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, I mean, this book comes nowhere close to how amazing Sharp Objects is. Think, you know, like what you were saying about the books that you recommended, like talking about dysfunctional families, having maybe not the most reliable female protagonist, deeply troubled in a way, like Sharp Objects. I feel like that's like the height of what all of these novels are trying to be. Not that everyone has to aspire to be Gillian Flynn, because we've ranted about that before. I would say if I was going to compare it to a book that I would give like a similar rating to and has similar vibes, The Girls by Emma Klein.
Yeah, that makes sense. Oh, so then what did you rate Roanoke Girls?
I would say it's like a 3. Like, definitely enjoyable, but not one that I'm going to remember a year from now.
Okay, that makes sense to me. I initially gave it a 3, and then I, on my Goodreads, I went back and did a 2.5. Because, like, my rating scale is 3 is usually, I liked it. I might even read it again one day if I want to. But with Roanoke Girls, I don't think I'll ever read it again.
Yeah, I don't think I will either.
I think I got what I needed out of it.
Yeah. It's like, as I was saying earlier, like, very similar to The Girls. Like, I read The Girls 3 or 4 years ago, and it, like, comes into my thoughts every now and then. Like, I look at it, I'm like, oh, yeah, I read that at one point in time. But do I ever need to look at it again? No.
No.
And that's this.
What did you like about Roanoke Girls?
That's going to have to wait for the spoiler discussion.
Oh, okay.
Is there any spoiler-free things that you liked about this novel?
Yeah, I love I loved Allegra's whole vibe from the moment I knew her or met her. I was like, you fascinate me.
Her relationship with Lane was phenomenal to read. Every single time I was like, what's she gonna do?
Yeah, I loved that. I love that it was like such an easy, quick read.
Yeah.
Like, if, especially if you're trying to like stack up your numbers for your year end, which I don't like necessarily think you need to do, read for quality, but if you are trying to hit a goal, this is a book you can get down so quickly.
Or if you're just cleaning and need something on in the background, I listened to this while cleaning my apartment. And I mean, it's only like a 6 or 7 hour audiobook, right? Yeah, and we both listened to it on Libby. So check it out on Libby. And it was just, it's a nice one. Not one that's going to change my entire world, but what books really will.
So a few,
Ulysses. But, okay. So do you have any other book recommendations that give off a similar vibe to this?
I sure do. I'm going to rubber stamp your Gillian Flynn, anything by her. She, as you said, she's the pinnacle of thrillers. But I also have The Wife Between Us by Greer Hendricks and Sarah Peckman. I think it's Peckman. I wrote Pac-Man, but I think it's Peckman.
You just got Pac-Man on your brain?
I got Pac-Man. As far as, like, unreliability for the narrator, as far as, like, very quick, fun thriller, if like, to me, this is peak beach read, something you get done, like, in one or two sittings on the beach, maybe with a Mai Tai in hand. And then my fourth one is The Death of Mrs. Westaway by Ruth Ware. So
I've never read any books by Ruth Ware.
Yeah.
Is this the one I should start with?
I think it's probably her better one.
Okay.
I think writing-wise, Ruth Ware definitely matches up to Roanoke Girls. Like, you're going to get a lot of fun out of it. You're going to, it's going to be quick and easy, but you're not going to be thinking too hard.
Okay.
And also, kind of like Roanoke Girls, you're probably going to find her books pretty predictable. But if you're someone who can still enjoy the thrillers, knowing the twist is going to come, it's still really fun to read.
Nice. Okay. Very cool.
And what about you? What are your other recommendations?
So I have two more. These are both more like detective fiction. And my first one is The Big Sleep by Raymond Chandler. This is a hard-boiled detective novel that came out in the 1930s, like the peak of hard-boiled detective fiction, and it follows Detective Philip Marlowe. He's a private investigator, and he works in LA, and he's all focused on chivalry, being an honorable man, but he lives in an incredibly corrupt landscape. He lives in LA in the 1930s, 1940s, not necessarily the most chivalric place. There's a lot of crime, there's a lot of deceit happening around him, and it's him navigating this world and a particular case that he's working on. And I feel like this is one that, you know, there's a very famous adaptation of it starring Humphrey Bogart, but if you have not seen it, now I'm thinking that Humphrey Bogart might be the Maltese Falcon. I know he's in that one. He might be in both. Who knows? If you haven't seen the movie, if you don't know anything about it, this is a book that you could, it's like less than 200 pages. I think it's like 150. You could finish this book very quickly. It is predictable at times, but if you want to like go back to earlier detective fiction, especially like earlier American detective fiction that kind of shaped the genre today, I highly recommend The Big Sleep. And then I have a short story collection with one story in it in particular that I want to focus on, and that's the New York Trilogy by Paul Auster, specifically the first story in it, which is called City of Glass. All three stories in this are phenomenal. I also really liked a short story, Ghost, which is the second one in the collection, I believe. But City of Glass is one that just really hits the spot for me. It's the first one in the collection, and I knew as soon as reading, as soon as I read it, that it was going to be one of the favorite things that I read in graduate school. And I read it my first semester of graduate school, so it had a big impression on me.
Wow.
And it's just, it's really, really fun. It's a detective short story, and it's a, as Wikipedia told me earlier when I was trying to remember things, because I can't, it is a postmodern interpretation of detective fiction. It's all about, much like The Big Sleep, you know, lawless landscape, people trying to be decent, I guess, in that space. And so City of Glass follows the author Daniel Quinn, who writes detective fiction in his own life. So he is an author who also becomes a private detective after he is sent requests to work on a case. There's a lot of fun here with interpreting if a narrator is, I don't want to give away too much about it, but there's a lot of fun here with unreliability of narration, unreliability as someone who becomes like obsessed with a case and being like, is this actually happening? Or are you just really hopeful that this is happening? And it's just really, really fun. It plays with Don Quixote a lot. Kendra had to listen to me scream about this a little earlier, but like anytime anything references Don Quixote, I am a fan. And this is just done in a very comedic, but also dark and twisted way. And I highly recommend it.
Wow, they both sound amazing.
Yeah. I really like New York Trilogy. I feel like you would really, really like. No, you're not super big into like American postmodernism, but this is like, it's a cool twist on detective fiction. I think you would really like it.
All right. Add it to the never-ending TBR, but sounds good.
Yeah, it's really good. I have a really pretty edition of this book. If you wanted to borrow it, it's really nice.
Okay. But definitely want to see it. Yeah. Maybe I'll borrow it too.
Wow. Okay. So from there, we wanted to talk about...
Spoilers?
Oh, I thought we were going to do the books that we want to read that are similar to this.
You are so right. We should definitely do that.
Okay. So for this next section, we're going to be talking about books that we feel like would have similar vibes to Roanoke Girls, but also the books that we just talked about. We're not entirely sure. But yeah. What are your choices for books that could possibly be like this?
Should I do both or should I just do one?
Do whatever you like.
Okay. These are actually two books I've been meaning to read, and I chose them because they, like the Roanoke Girls, are female-driven narratives. They also deal, I think, with like summary crimes, I think.
For a second, I thought you said submarine crimes. And I...
Honestly, anyone who has a book with a submarine crime...
We could just watch that HBO show about that journalist that was murdered on a submarine.
Oh, I think I saw that. The one where she went to go meet the yacht. Or not the yacht. She was some rich asshole.
Yeah.
And then she just disappears and everyone... Or he didn't expect anyone to actually ask questions. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because... Men think they can get away with anything.
Yeah.
And often they sadly can.
Yeah.
Yikes. Okay.
Anyway. So the first one is The Woman in the Window by A.J. Finn. I know so little about this book other than I know a lot of people love it. And it's going to be a Netflix movie. So.
With Amy Adams, right?
With Amy Adams. Wow. Hopefully, maybe she'll finally get that Oscar.
She really fucking deserves it.
Yeah.
Her and Sharp Objects, just throwing it out there.
It's the best.
So good.
I'm so excited. I'm definitely going to get to that this summer. I feel like it's a perfect summer read. And then I'm also going to get to Pretty Girls by Karen Slaughter, another one that's a bit older that I've been meaning to get to. I've heard that this one is so graphic and horrifying. And I was like, I'm listening.
You're like, sign me up.
But I definitely have been warned that it does deal with a lot of like sexual violence and like graphic. So I've been putting that one off because obviously that's not fun to read.
Yeah.
But it seems really good at the same time. So I want to read it. What about you? What are your picks?
So my picks are, these are two books that I know absolutely nothing about. I think they're probably similar to yours where it's like you say that they're fun, but they're actually really, really dark. But sometimes you just need that darkness and it is like fills a void in you. Mm-hmm. So my two picks of this are for two books that came out in 2019, and that is Bunny by Mona Awad. Know nothing about this book. You told me earlier that people say it's like Secret History. I also have not read Secret History. So is it dark academia? I don't know. Maybe. I see it on Instagram a lot. The next book that I would like to read this summer is Trust Exercise by Susan Choi. I read another book by Susan Choi at the beginning of quarantine, that's American Woman, and I really enjoyed American Woman. That was like a solid 3 for me. I would say it's probably comparable to Roanoke Girls in just general vibes, detective mystery style, but with like an iconic American crime. Yeah, I don't know. It just seems cool. Both have really cute covers, and they're sitting in my room, and they've been sitting there for months, and I need to read them.
I love that.
Yeah, I'm happy that we're both making our way through our stacks of physical unread books.
I know. Oh my gosh. It stresses me out. I tried, when I built my new bookcase, I tried to count how many books I owned that I hadn't read, and I started to get more stressed out. It definitely isn't as many as I've read, at least. Uh-huh. I think if I had more books that I haven't read than I've read, I might have just canceled all plans for the rest of the year and just finished them.
Yeah.
I don't know.
A year of rest, reading, and relaxation.
Oh, yeah. I'm just so bad about, like, when I have a book I know I'm never going to read, I usually donate it or like give it away. And so that only, I don't know, it's probably better for the environment that I do that, but mm-hmm. I don't know.
Do whatever you like, as long as it's not hurting yourself or other people.
That's true. You're right. I'm overthinking it.
I mean, no, you're not overthinking it. Having books that you haven't read on your shelf can be a stressful experience. And I know sometimes I look at mine and I'm just like, why are you there? I know I put you there, but you're teasing me. You're taunting me.
Don't mock my pain.
Okay, let's move away from this pain into a different kind of pain. Let's scream about Roanoke Girls. It's time.
Okay.
You ready?
Spoilers?
Yes.
Spoilers. All right. So if you want to be spoiled, stick around. We love spoiling things for you. We're really good at it. But if not, come back later. Go read it. Come back later.
Okay. So countdown. 3, 2, 1. What do we scream about first?
Incest.
Okay.
Ick. So
icky and so many layers. So, not to say that if it only happened once, it wouldn't be disgusting, but there is an insane amount of incest in this book.
Did I text you? I was like, I was not prepared for an entire book that is only about incest. Mm-hmm.
I didn't know anything about this book before I started it. I think I watched a YouTube video of Paperback Dreams and Paperback Dad a while ago.
Mm, they're so and sweet.
I think Larry recommended it or said that he was going to read it. And I was like, okay, if Larry likes it, I'll like it. And so I didn't know when I started listening to it and it like immediately jumps into the incest. I'm like, Larry, what did you have me read?
All right, we got to DM Larry and be like, why?
Paperback Dad, why you do me so dirty?
Where to start? You said that your what you liked about this book was going to be a spoiler. Can we start there or is that...
So it's weird to say that I think the best part of this book is the mystery of searching for Allegra and also flashing back to Lane experiencing Roanoke for the first time. And like, you know, you get information for both of those cases at the same time. The point in this book that turned it for me, that moved it from like a 2.5 to like a 3, possibly 3.5 if I'm like having a happy day. It's not a 3.5, it's a 3, is when... Lane catches Allegra and their grandpa because...
What are they doing?
They're fucking and it's gross! Or well, they're spooning after he raped her.
Yeah.
Allegra's just totally normalized it. She's like, it's how he shows that he loves me. And it's like, honey, no. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. At what point did you know that Allegra was also being...
Like, immediately.
Yeah, okay.
Because it's every single Roanoke girl.
Yes.
Even his twin sister, who I thought was grandma for 80% of the book.
I'm still not convinced it's not. Just kidding. I know it's not. But like, I was telling August off air, there is so much incest in this book. I could not keep track of who was related to who. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're all related, but like by how. So first we have Yates, who is the rapist, mm-hmm. and the patriarch incestuous monster. He had a twin sister. Was it Penelope? Was Penelope the twin? I'm sorry.
There's so many.
I should have written it down, but like I could not keep up.
It was hard to keep everything, especially listening to it. It was just a lot, yeah.
So he has a twin sister who he has a baby with. Mm-hmm. After the baby's born, he has another sister who he also impregnates. Mm-hmm. I think they're all like teenagers, right?
When he likes them when they're 14.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So not only a rapist, but a pedophile. Mm-hmm. So they all grow up, or they don't grow up. He grows up. They disappear. Mm-hmm. Things happen. Mm-hmm. And then he begins relationships one after the other with his daughters, mm-hmm. and then his grandchildren.
His daughters who are also... Okay. But so his daughters are also his grandchildren.
Yes.
And his grandchildren are also his daughter. Mm.
So you know what I compared it to when I was talking to Nick about this? Because I put the book down. It was after I sent you that meme where I was like, is that episode in Game of Thrones, the guy, I forgot his name.
Oh, Craster's Creep.
Craster's Creep, thank you. Who only keeps daughters so that mm-hmm. he can impregnate them. Mm-hmm. So they are both.
Oh, what's her name?
Gilly.
Gilly. Oh, I love Gilly. Gilly and Sam OTP.
I know, they're so sweet. So cute. So, like you said, they're both daughters and granddaughters, which mm-hmm. I just...
Should I go on my rant now about what I read online?
Yes, please.
Okay. So, when I was preparing for this episode, because surprise, sometimes we do prepare, I was just looking up stuff online to get the general vibe of what people thought of this, and I stumbled upon a blog post. This was one of the first things that popped up when you Google Roanoke Girls discussion or summary, and it talked about how what Yates does in this book, how it's not rape because the women love him and because he is described as attractive. And I think we can all agree that that person is just wrong, and I hope that they have had numerous emails reaching out to them telling them that they're wrong, because just because you're attractive does not mean you can get away with attacking young women who are 14 years old, who you groomed to do this with you. Like, it's just so fucked up that someone could read this book and be like, well, yeah, like, it is gross, it is incest, but you know what? It's not rape because he's attractive and the girls say that they're in love with him. Like, how can someone think that way? And it was like, this book came out somewhat recently, 2017. That was written in the last 4 years. Like, how?
I think the FBI should immediately go to that person's house.
Yeah.
Because what? Of course, like, that just, I felt like what I really liked about this book is that it really shows you how insidious and, like, how hard grooming is to break apart from.
Yeah.
Like, this man, this monster, was grooming women, girls from birth.
Mm-hmm.
So he, and that's exactly, like, what was nice to have Lane's perspective of. It's because she recognized that. And also, like, Lane did have this weird attraction to him, too.
I mean, it shows, like, she only spent one summer with him, and he had that effect over her. Like, he is a master manipulator.
Yeah, exactly.
And how can you read this book and come away and be like, well, not a crime, but it is.
It is. Ugh. Yeah, it is. And this book is so icky thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
But that is one thing I think it did really well, is it shows just, like, this is what grooming looks like.
Yeah.
I think especially if, like, younger girls are reading this book, although I hope, like, no high school age children are reading this book.
Maybe wait until you're, like, 16 or 17.
Yeah, 16, 17, yeah. I probably would have read it.
Yeah. Knowing me, I probably would have read it when I was, like,
8?
14. No, 8 years old is for Silence of the Lambs and Silence of the Lambs only.
Oh, my God. Explains so much. Clarice. Anyway.
Yeah, this book is fucking gross, and it does a good job explaining that it is fucking gross, and it's just upsetting that someone could read a blatant description of how something is gross and a fucking crime and not get it. But you know what? Some things are more difficult for some people. But hopefully they've gotten a lot of emails correcting them. If not, I'll email them.
Yeah, we hope for
it's
growth.
Okay. Yeah, personal growth is all we want. So talking about crimes and people not doing what they should be doing, or what we would like them to be doing, let's talk about Charlie and Grandma. How complicit are both of them?
Oh, Charlie the groundskeeper?
Charlie is the groundskeeper.
Okay, I'm sorry, there's so many C's. I was like, is that the cop?
We can talk about the himbo cop later.
Yeah, sorry, I'm already confused. So I don't blame Charlie as much as I blame the grandma.
Okay.
So I think what you're asking is, like, obviously, they both knew exactly what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I understand the grandma, in a way, is a victim as well of this manipulation.
Mm-hmm. As is Charlie, in a different way. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's what I'm trying. I don't know. It's so hard. They're both complicit completely. I
mean, grandma, legit murderer, right?
Yeah, but I also kind of, like, that was one of her redeeming actions for me, to be honest. So they have this infant, and the grandma never, like, she says, like, oh, I never really wanted to be a mom.
Mm-hmm.
I just loved Yates and, like, just did it. But they have this one daughter she had an immediate connection to, and it was after she'd already had a few daughters, and she knew exactly what Yates was doing to them.
Mm-hmm.
And she knew, like, yeah, she knew that poor child's future, and so she suffocated her.
Yeah.
And I was like,
well, doesn't grandma also Allegra?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which, that was the part where I was like, this could be a 2.5. I was so mad that it was the grandma, because I thought that was so predictable.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, like, there's moments where I feel for the grandma, like, getting her backstory of how she met Yates and everything. Just, like, you're just as brainwashed as all the other women in his life. But also, you come from a place of agency while your family said that they would abandon you. Like, you have ample opportunity to get away from that.
Mm-hmm.
Charlie holding him, like, financially hostage is also just another disgusting thing that Yates does.
Yeah. And I think with the grandma, I think obviously the ideal thing you could do is, no matter what you stand to lose, you don't ever send someone, or, like, send someone into their own abuse, or at least don't turn a blind eye to it. I think the reason the grandma, like, pisses me off more than Charlie is that she does have access to lots of money. Mm-hmm. So what, like, your family shunned you? Okay, a lot of people's family do that for, you know, for lots of different reasons. Mm-hmm. And they don't allow abuse to happen mm-hmm. to their own children. Such yeah. horrific abuse, ongoing abuse. With Charlie, I feel like his is still wrong. He should have stepped in. But I also do feel like in his own way, he is helping these girls mm. by, like, especially with Lane, mm-hmm. I felt like he did try to, like, intercept.
Yeah. There's, like, moments, like, when he, like, told Allegra and Lane to, like, cover up more when they were on the roof,
yeah.
which is, like, their not home. Their they should be able yeah. to do what they want and be comfortable with. They shouldn't have to change just because a fucking rapist and pervert lives in their household. Yeah. He shouldn't be there. But,
yeah,
him, like, giving Lane money when she's, like, going to escape, like, of course that is what he should be doing, but also, like, just go. Like, I know Cooper is a himbo and a cab, but, like, tell fucking Cooper yeah. that this is happening. Like, he apparently talks about how much he loves Allegra.
Yeah, well, even
leave an anonymous fucking note somewhere. Yeah. Like, come on.
Well, at any point, I mean, the second Charlie even suspected it, he should have just gone to the cops. Like, mm-hmm. I understand that, like, money does control our lives. It is, like, a scary thing, you mm-hmm. like you said, to be, like, it's a scary thing to have money held over you and not to know where your livelihood is coming. Mm-hmm. Guess what is scarier? Being victimized by your fucking grandfather.
Yeah.
So, I...
Also, like, let's just be real. If he turned in Yates and this became a giant news story and he was held up because, you know, he would be held up as, like, the hero of the whole thing that's quote unquote saved all these women, be a hero in the mm-hmm. public's view, like, he would be probably okay. I don't know.
Yeah, that, but that also makes me think that the whole town kind of knew.
Yeah,
so I think, you know what, I'm, like, coming to this conclusion as we're talking but
yeah, because Cooper had an idea. Yeah.
Well, he didn't know. He suspected. Yeah. But to me, I'm like, you suspect it. You basically know.
Yeah.
I felt like the whole town had this idea, especially the way they all hated the Roanokes. They mm-hmm. blamed the young girls for their own over-sexualization. And I feel like maybe Charlie and the grandma knew that if they did go to the cops or even to, like, another town to report it,
mm-hmm.
nothing would really happen yeah. because nothing had been happening.
Yeah. And at the end, what really happens other than grandma gets arrested?
Yeah. I mean, and also just look how...
Does Yates even get arrested at the end?
I don't think so, no. Because it doesn't come to light that... Right?
Disgusting.
Because Lane doesn't tell anyone.
She just also, I mean, sadly, statute of limitations are a thing against sexual assault in yeah. this country. And so, I mean, who knows? With Allegra dead, like, how much would they... I guess she's pregnant, but, you know.
Yeah. Well, yeah. even, like... living victims, living yeah. survivors, look at how our society treats rapists.
Yeah.
So.
And he is a rich, white, older man.
And he's charming.
And he lives in Kansas.
Yeah.
Republican AF.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, it's so fucking gross. The mm-hmm. whole thing's so gross.
Oh, fuck. What's the grandma's second in command's name? Sophie? Sophia?
Oh, the cook? I almost called her mistress. Oh my gosh.
If only. Mistress to the grandma.
Mistress to the grandma. Yeah.
Just throwing it out there.
I don't know. Is it Sophie?
I think it's Sophie. Fuck her, honestly.
But she knows too. She's just yeah. I totally forgot about her. And she sucks at cooking. So how gross. Is she even serving anyone?
She's only serving grandma in her murderous ways.
So I'm looking at discussion questions okay. because I am lost for words. I just want to rage about the incest. So we've already talked about the structure of the novel. I totally agree. I liked the flashback in, like, the present day. I mm-hmm. love when thrillers are told that way.
Mm-hmm. I feel like it was told really effectively through that way. Like, I feel like that's, like, something that's, like, we've all read, like, a 2-star book that does it. And it's just, like, it's not adding anything. It's just, in fact, almost making it worse in a way. I feel like we're both looking at a book right now. We know. And this is definitely not the case. I thought that this was done very well.
Yeah, I agree. I mm-hmm. totally agree.
And it's weird, like, even with that, like, knowing, having an idea of what to come, not saying, like, we knew, but we had, it's pretty predictable. I feel like even with that, it was still fun to read.
Yeah, I agree. So I think I suspected as soon as we had the twin sisters chapter, but mm-hmm. you didn't realize it was the sister. They don't name it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like, her talking about her falling in love with Yates. and then getting pregnant, and then her realizing that he's watching this other girl who lives with them. And I remember looking...
It's her, their younger sister, right?
It's their younger sister. Yeah, but the way they phrase it, they never... Yeah. Like, she never says sibling or anything in that chapter. Mm-hmm. And I remember going, wait a minute.
I think that chapter is why I thought that grandma was actually his sister.
Yeah, it's confusing. Mm-hmm. And there's too many sisters and too many daughters and granddaughters.
What would he do if they had a son?
I think it would be like that Game of Thrones guy.
Just out?
Disappear them.
Should we talk about Tommy and Cooper?
Oh, Tommy. Okay. Tommy, the little puppy.
He is a little puppy.
Which one did you like better?
Did I say Cooper was the cop earlier?
Yeah, that's fine.
Cooper is not the cop. He is a mechanic.
Honestly, I wouldn't have noticed. We could have been talking about it forever.
There's not a lot of people in this book, but there are at the same time.
There are a lot for the plot, I think.
Yeah. So Tommy and Cooper meet the girls. They already knew Allegra because she lived there her entire life. But they meet Lane at her summer when they're visiting. Tommy and Cooper are both like 18. Like they just graduated from high school. And Lane and Allegra are like 16.
They're 15.
15, 16. Yeah, so their age difference is a little interesting, but, you know, don't really focus on that so much in comparison to the other sexual trauma that is happening.
Yeah, I think but that just, like, slipped my mind completely.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah. Lane and Cooper. Lane
and Cooper
get together, and Allegra and Tommy are already together. And they're interesting couples. Do you want to tell me a bit about them?
Yeah, so I think the biggest juxtaposition between the two couples is that Cooper and Lane are fucking nonstop.
Mm-hmm.
And that's...
their entire relationship.
Yeah, I was going to say that's... And they actually have a really dysfunctional, unhealthy relationship because mm-hmm. they both like each other so much and they're both, like, so damaged that they, like, refuse to share any, like... emotions or be vulnerable with each other, so they're mm-hmm. constantly trying to hurt the other person so mm-hmm. that they seem tougher. So very high school, I think, but definitely not like the grand scheme trauma that this book explores, so mm-hmm. it just didn't really stand out to me. But Tommy and Allegra, so Tommy's in love with Allegra. I think in another life Allegra would have loved Tommy. She doesn't though. Mm-mm. She loves his attention.
The convenience of the relationship is what gets her. Yeah.
And they don't do anything physical,
mm-mm.
ever. Mm-mm. And actually, Allegra slut shames Lane for having sex with Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you want to say what she said?
Oh, I don't even remember what she said.
Oh, it stood out to me because this was the moment. So I knew that the grandpa definitely was an abuser, but mm-hmm. I was like, maybe he hasn't gotten to Allegra yet. Maybe that's like the whole thing.
Mm.
But she sees Lane and Cooper kind of like right like post sex mm-hmm. when it's clear, and she gets really mad at Lane, and she said sex is supposed to be special, it's supposed to show you that you're his favorite.
Ugh.
And I was like, okay, I see what's happening now.
I mean, if you want to view sex as special, that's totally okay, not gonna yuck anyone's yum, but because to show that you're his favorite,
that's the moment.
What?
And she says some other things too where it's like mm-hmm. how it's supposed to be all about love, which like a lot of people do believe in. That's fine. Like that's mm-hmm. obviously your prerogative, but I didn't like that was gross. But I mean, like, I was interested by that scene because it was the first glimpse into how he does this manipulation.
Yeah,
which he grooms them by like giving them special attention and then taking it away mm-hmm. and then teaching them that if he pays physical attention to them, that means he loves them more than any other woman in his life.
And he creates these like special gestures for each girl that's unique to them, so they know that they have this special thing that only he will do to them. Like, isn't it like rubbing like an eyebrow or something?
Yeah.
It's also like, don't fucking touch anybody's eyebrows. Like, what that's if they put weird. A lot of work into it?
Yeah.
Like, what if they haven't put on their finishing spray?
Oh, that's actually a really good point. I'd be smudge really brow? I'd be like, get the fuck out of it.
This is Anastasia. This is Fenty. Stop.
Don't ever bring your hand near my face. Yeah. Ick. Okay.
Ick. That should just be the general review for...
That's what I wrote on Goodreads. I was just like, ick. Gagging noise. Okay. What about you? What was the scene that was like, that stuck out the most to you?
Again, when Lane walks in and sees Allegra and Granddad... And she just immediately like, fuck this, I'm out. I'm like, Lane, that is a great decision. Usually in books when shit like this happens, the character does exactly what they shouldn't do. Lane's out of there. I'm like, Respect.
She's like, nope, nope, I'm not even fucking with this anymore. I'm done.
Mm-hmm. As she should be, because yeah,
that's the appropriate
response.
Yeah. What did you think of her second response that she rejected but did kind of naturally come out?
Oh, that she was wondering why it wasn't her?
Yeah, she was jealous.
It just like shows how grooming can happen so quickly. Mm-hmm. Especially like Lane is very, very damaged and is upfront about a lot of the trauma that she's experienced throughout her life, like her relationship with her mom specifically, and just shows like how, you know, vulnerable people are taken advantage of, and it can happen way quicker than most people would think. How about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I felt the exact same way. I felt like that was actually one thing that made sense in the book. Not one thing, one of the things that made sense in the book, because she also has been victimized by Yates.
Mm-hmm.
Also, like you bring up, she felt like her mom didn't love her whole life. And mm-hmm. it's not until this whole revelation comes out that she actually realizes her mom loved her the best she could. She mm-hmm. was just suffering because she had been abused.
Mm-hmm.
Lane, now realizing that Yates is also her father, knows that that's maybe why her mom was so cruel to her sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
There's this scene actually when they're in bed and the mom and Lane mm-hmm. are, like, she's a child, are in bed, and her mom is like kind of stroking her hair going, you're so beautiful, and then she kind of flips and goes, you look just like him, and tries to strangle Lane.
Mm-hmm.
And Lane gets away, but now she's realizing every time she saw my face, she was seeing her abuser.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were so many layers to the trauma that happens to all of these women and young girls specifically, but I felt like when Lane admitted to herself that she was jealous and also repulsed by her own jealousy,
mm-hmm.
it was such a human reaction.
Mm-hmm. Lane is definitely, I think, like a shining star. Not shining star. Lane's reactions to things, like showing how human that she actually is, or how human she is something that I feel like Amy Engel did like very, very well in this. I think having her perspective and like with her experiences too, like coming to these realizations, not only in the storyline where she's a teenager spending the summer there, but also like as an adult returning to Roanoke, I feel like that is just almost refreshing in a way. Like we need that in mm-hmm. order to get through this dark, dark story.
I totally agree. I think that if Lane and Allegra had been different, I would not have liked the book at all. I probably wouldn't have finished it, but
So let's talk about Allegra's fun little hobby of carving words into things. Big sharp objects energy.
Oh, I love her so much.
I know, she's so cute. Just that teen angst of just like I'm also, you know, she's going through a very, very, very difficult time, but that angst of just like, let me just carve off exactly how I'm feeling in this moment. It just seems very therapeutic. Yeah. She's finding things that work for her to make her feel better.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. At first, I thought, before like I realized what was fully happening, I was like, all right, Allegra is probably going to kill someone with a knife. Like, that was for sure what I was going to, or that I thought it was going to be revealed that she was like cutting herself like in sharp objects or something.
Mm-hmm.
But then once I realized like the sexual abuse was happening, I was like, oh, this is her outlet for mm-hmm. the trauma without even her realizing it.
Mm-hmm.
That her grandfather is like scarring her in so many ways that mm-hmm. she's literally carving out her place in the world. It's
So when she first started, like they first started finding words from her, or when Lane first starts finding words from her, because this is something that she's been doing for a while, I thought that, you know, Allegra's missing, Allegra's probably dead, and there might be a word carved into her.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking, but
might have been a bit more poetic. But the reason it's not poetic is because it was good old Gran who killed her, which I thought was the most boring.
So boring.
Solution.
It's like, oh, wow, I did not see that coming in the first 30 pages.
Yeah, like, of course it was the fucking grandmother. Yeah. Like, if anything, honestly, if it had been Lane.
Honestly, even if it was Yates.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
To quote Oscar Wilde grossly, each man kills the things he loves.
Oh, yeah.
Disgusting. Disgusting.
It's a good quote, but in this case.
I mean, it's gross in his sense, too, but just in a different way.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Okay. Ooh. My question for you is, can we talk about the dynamic between Allegra and Lane?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you want to start us off?
I've said it already a million times this episode, but obsessive, dysfunctional female relationships are my favorite things mm-hmm. in books, other than, like,
Your family. Devil fetish?
Oh my god. Oh, I have to show you a meme Paige sent me. That's about devil fetishes.
Okay.
Off air. But I love it. I just love this, like, I don't know, it takes me back to, like, high school when you have your best friends. Mm-hmm. And, like, at that age, you're like, oh, I would for sure kill for this person. I would for sure die for them, which you wouldn't. Mm-hmm. But you are so impressionable and you're so, like, obsessive.
Ride or die, yeah.
Yeah, and your identity is wholly entwined, like, into the people who are around you. Mm-hmm. And so I just love that. I love that connection. And I also just love women. So want them to have... Even, I mean, Allegra and Lane's relationship is unhealthy, but to have that kind of connection.
Mm-hmm.
So what's unhealthy about Allegra and Lane's relationship, I think, is they both have this, like, competitive nature, and they both are orphans. They both haven't received the attention they need. I think they both lived their lives so long without anyone, anyone they can truly trust. And I think the instant they meet, they know that they see the other person in them, not just physically, but, like, they have this connection because they're like, here is someone who knows what it's like to be me, who knows what it's like to be a Roanoke girl, to be an orphan. I just love that. I also, you know, Allegra's kind of shitty to Lane at times, but also I think Lane adds a sense of, like, introspection to Allegra that she's never had to really care about.
A different perspective from outside of their small rural town where their granddad is king. I think that is definitely, like, eye-opening to Allegra at times, even though she might not want to admit it, and she's in denial about a lot of the stuff that's going on because she's been so groomed. But I feel like Lane definitely opens up a variety of different possibilities. And even after Lane runs away and Allegra calls her, like, it seems like maybe Allegra always held on to Lane as a hope of possibly getting out, which is so sad.
Do you think if Lane had answered the phone... Allegra, so you don't think Allegra would have survived?
I don't think Allegra would have gotten out of there alive.
I don't think so either.
Based off of the Roanoke girl's history of going missing or just dying or being murdered, I'm even a little shocked that Lane got out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's because she just ran it impulsively. And I think also at that point...
Well, even when she returns as an adult when they're trying to find Allegra, I'm like, Lane, big mistake.
Well, there was another thing that kind of annoyed me about this novel is that, like, remember that time when they're sitting in the kitchen and Lane is talking to them, like, you all know what he did, like, talking about the abuse. I'm like, how are you sitting at their table?
Go stay with Tommy. Literally. Don't even go into the town. I don't know. Stay with Tommy. Stay with Cooper, even.
Her motel is safer. Like,
well, she says that she doesn't have any money.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
I mean, you can always stay in your car. I know that's not very fun. A lot of people make that work. A lot of people like that. But also just go stay with Tommy or Cooper.
Yeah.
You know people in this town that haven't acted as predators towards everyone in your fucking family.
Yeah. That was a weird moment for me where I was like, oh, cool. It's satisfying because Lane is confronting them. But at the same time, like, she's also just sitting at their kitchen table having tea with them about it. Where I was like, how...
It's like, how did you go from so smart when you left the house immediately to coming back? It doesn't seem like a lot of people know that you're there. You're by yourself in this creepy house with a known rapist and just incest going on all around you. It's just not a safe environment for her to be in. And it's like, why would you put your... I know you're trying to find Allegra, but why would you put yourself in that situation? Every single time you go to that house, even if you don't want to tell people about what goes on inside that house, because I know presenting trauma to other people can be... really difficult, go with fucking Tommy or Cooper.
Yeah. Tommy would have for sure, like, put her up.
Just, like, have a friend go with you.
Yeah.
Go into that house, be like, I'm getting my shit, let me know if there's anything, I'm gonna look for carved words, and then get the fuck out.
I'm taking the dog. I'm
taking the dog. If only there was a dog to take.
I know. Well, thank God there are no dogs in this book, because I couldn't deal with them being harmed. Okay.
No puppies hurt. Thank God. Yeah.
So I think the only thing left for us to cover is the ending. How did you feel about the ending?
About Allegra's body being found? Or
I was thinking more of, like, Lane's ending.
Oh, yes, going away with Cooper?
Yeah.
Okay, so we should say that Allegra's body is found within a swimming hole. She was murdered by Grandma. Grandma's arrested. And then Lane and Cooper decide to leave Roanoke. Cooper's only lived outside of Roanoke once in his life before. And Lane seems kind of lost. She wants to figure out what's going on. So they decided to go on a big road trip and just kind of see where they end up.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I think it's kind of sweet. I also don't feel like her and Cooper's relationship is sustainable, so maybe being trapped in a small car for an extended period of time isn't the best decision.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't seem like anyone in this book is really capable of any good decisions.
Yes.
Yeah. What did you think of it?
I kind of felt the same way. I was like, well, this isn't going to last. Like, this is going to turn really sour really fast.
Yeah.
I mean, especially your high school sweetheart. Come on. You have nothing in common with him.
They need to be somewhere where if they're going to be a couple, they have to have immediate access to a couples therapist because they're going to need it. They've been through a lot.
Yes. Even just individual therapy would go a long way.
Yeah.
I am glad it ended on, like, an ambiguous note, mm-hmm. because obviously there's no neat way to heal from this severe amount of trauma, not mm-hmm. only losing your cousin, but in this way. And it just makes sense, I think, too, because I don't think Lane's particularly well adjusted, mm-hmm. so it makes sense that she would make a decision to be like, I'll just go on this road trip with this guy.
But also, like, she talked about in the beginning, like, she didn't have any money left. She had her car, and, like, that's it. She had an apartment back in LA, but doesn't seem like she had a lot of stuff there. She doesn't seem like she's going back to it. So maybe this is good for her to start completely fresh.
Yeah.
But also, how sustainable is that fresh start going to be?
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Or I should have said a new start, because I'm thinking about Arrested Development. Anus start.
I'm never going to finish that.
What?
I was going to say that when he was an analysis and therapist.
He's blue. Don't die. Okay. Yeah, what an ending.
What a book.
Yeah. Are you glad to have read this overall?
Oh, yeah. I think it was worth it.
Yeah.
And like you said, it was so quick and fun. That mm-hmm.
Still feels weird calling this book fun, but it definitely was.
You're right.
We just like the darker stuff, and that's okay. Okay. Not that this is ever going to be made into a movie.
Oh, no.
But if it was made into a movie, I did not prep for this either. Who would play Lane? Adult Lane. Or teenage. Whatever's easiest.
I don't think I have a teenage solution, because I don't think I know many teenage actors. But Adult Lane. Oh, boy. Okay. I'm going to go with... Are they all supposed to have dark hair? I guess they just dye their hair.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to, like,
the only requirement for physical description is ginormous breasts. Yeah.
Okay, well, they can just, like, what, Photoshop that?
Pads.
Get a breast
Those implant. Silicone breasts that drag queens wear.
Yes, that's a good solution. Mm-hmm. Okay, I feel like this is a cop-out, but I'm going to go with Amy Adams.
Okay.
I just feel like she does the, like, dark main characters uh-huh. really well. What about you?
I don't know who I would cast as Lane. I know who I want to cast as Allegra.
Ooh. Lay that on me, because I don't
okay.
know.
Okay. Allegra Amanda Seyfried.
Oh, my gosh. I love that.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be fun? And, okay, so her and Amy Adams together, that's cool. They could pass as sisters. They could make that work. Who would play Granddad?
I know. What's his name? Is it Donald Sutherland, the guy from who plays?
Oh.
I know. I love him.
Love. Yeah. Oh, I love Donald Sutherland. I was thinking of Charles Dance.
What is he?
Tywin Lannister.
Oh, ew. You're right.
He was also in Mank, which Amanda Seyfried was also in, but Mank was shit. Regret watching
it. See it.
Don't see it. It's bad.
Now that you bring it up, the woman who plays Cersei, I can never remember her name.
Oh, it's on the... If you asked me this 2 years ago, Lena...
Yeah, Headley?
Yeah, something like that.
She would also be good as either Allegra or Lane, I think. Mm-hmm.
Or even just, like, she could play all the sisters. Yeah, but I'll just do that. Because they all look alike. Okay, so who would play Grandma?
Nicole Kidman.
Okay.
That's my...
I mean, I don't see her playing a grandma, but that's okay.
Oh, now I feel mean.
No, it's okay. Anybody can be a grandma.
I mean, she's hot.
Yeah.
At every age.
If I was going to pick who? Frances McDormand.
Oh, that's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Love her.
Either her or as it... Sophie or Sophia or whoever that woman's mm-hmm. name is. I cannot remember. Okay. Who would play Tommy, who is the cop?
Himbo?
Yes. I'm
trying to think of someone I think is dumb.
I think
of the Hemsworths.
Yeah, that's. I was thinking of the one that plays Gale in Hunger Games.
God. Miley's ex-husband. Yeah. What's his name to me?
Is that Liam?
Oh, yeah, Liam. I love the name Liam, though.
What's the other one's name? Chris.
Chris.
And there's another
and
one?
And there's Luke. That's the one who was in Emily's dad's movies.
Oh.
Yeah.
nice. Yeah. I don't know if I know who Luke Hemsworth is. If I saw him, I'm sure I would. Okay, and then who would play Cooper?
The dog? I don't know. Cooper? Okay, he's hot.
Cooper the dog? Cooper Our the friend dog. Paige's dog, Cooper?
I don't know. I need to be more prepared because I know these questions are coming. Cooper.
Just another one of the Hemsworths.
Yeah, or... just stick a Hemsworth in each role.
How did I just think of a person that I immediately forgot? Wow, I love my brain.
Relatable.
Cooper also could be played by, I cannot think of any, like, 30-year-old actors.
That's what I'm struggling with. I'm either overshooting or undershooting.
Yeah.
I am thinking of the cop or the detective, well, same thing, from Sharp Objects, the show. Yeah. Uh-huh. I think I was just picturing him and Amy Adams, like, when Lane and him were fucking.
Yeah. Hot. But also, I do not like his cross tattoo, so maybe not hot. Do you remember the cross tattoo that the guy in Sharp Objects had?
No, is it really the actor who has it? Or
I don't know, but he had a big cross tattoo, and I was just like, not for me, but I'm not going to yuck someone else's yum.
There are worse things you could have tattooed.
That's
especially
true.
Especially symbols.
Mm-hmm. Very, very true. I'm just thinking of bad tattoos now, so I immediately go to Ben Affleck.
Oh, yeah, he'd be good.
Yeah, he'd be good in this. As I think Cooper, he would do a good job.
Love Ben.
Maybe a little too old for Cooper.
Yeah, he's got to lose some of that dad bond, too.
Did you see the picture of after him and, what's her name? I love her.
Anna de Armas?
Yeah, when they broke up and then his brother threw away the cardboard cutout. Fuck his brother, though. Disgusting. Oh, you know who would be good? Joaquin Phoenix.
Oh, he'd be good at anything. Mm-hmm. Honestly, he could play Lane.
Okay.
Wow, that was all over the place.
Yeah.
A lot of editing.
We knew this was a chaotic discussion going into it, and I think we surpassed our expectations.
I think we honestly should just celebrate that we made it through that episode, that we recorded an hour-long episode. As you can tell, we are losing our goddamn minds.
Okay, Kendra, what are we talking about next week?
Similar vibes as the Roanoke Girls. Notoriously so... Oh, that's a bad joke. Just kidding. Pedal back. We're talking about The Awakening by Kate Chopin.
I have not read this book.
It's good.
Now I'm afraid that there's incest in it from what you've just said. Okay.
there's all consensual sexual awakenings.
That's cool. Okay.
Yeah.
So The Awakening by Kate Chopin?
Yeah, I think it's Chopin, yeah.
What else has Kate Chopin written, just for some quick background on what we're going to be getting into?
The Story of an Hour.
Which is a very stressful but very good short story.
So fucking good. It's my favorite of hers.
Yeah, that's the only thing of hers that I've read. We're going to be reading The Awakening, which came out in 1870, and I'm really excited. Excited to finally read this. This has been on my TBR for the longest time, which is stupid because it is so short.
It's so short. It's like less than 200 pages. In my copy, I think it's 150.
Okay.
It's really good. There's so much there. So I remember the first time I read it, I like put it off to the last minute because I was reading it for class. I was like, this is only like 200 pages. I can finish it. Guess what? It took me. I was late to the class because I was trying to finish it because it was so rich.
Okay. So I should give myself more time to read it. I expect. Okay.
I mean, because you're going to want to pause and take lots of notes, and her writing is just...
Yeah. I mean, if it's anything like Story of an Hour, that's one of my favorite short stories that I've ever read. Yeah. So I have high expectations, and I'm sure they'll be met.
Yeah, they're good.
Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you guys so much for listening to this chaotic as fuck episode. We appreciate it. We'd also really appreciate it if you could... like and subscribe wherever you're listening, whether that's Apple Podcasts, you can subscribe and like the podcast there. Or if you're on Spotify, you can just follow us there as well.
Also, you can find us on Instagram. We are BookDumb Podcast. You can also email us at bookdumb@gmail.com if you have any recommendations, any responses, reactions to this episode or other episodes. Any ideas for things you want us to cover, we definitely will try to get to them. We're still working through some other recommendations, but we'll add them to the list. And you also can reach out to us individually or follow us individually on Instagram. And I'm Kendra, so Kendra Lapp.
And me, August, you can find me at Iggy Poop.
Yeah. And so thank you so much for sticking it out with us.
Hope you have a great rest of your day.
Bye.